It worked. I'm so happy when technology works. So good afternoon, evening, morning, wherever you are in the world. This is the December 15th Storytelling and Organizations Story Lab. And our theme today is, because of the holidays, the theme of a gift, and a gift you may have received or perhaps given, and hopefully in somehow connected to an organizational context, since that is our focus. This is Tricia Griffin-Carty speaking. I'll be the facilitator for the call. And we're just going to have kind of an enjoyable 45 minutes or so or whatever with people sharing their stories and, you know, just kind of learning from each other, I think, certainly about the idea of gifts, which do not need to be material, could be, but don't have to be, and just getting a chance for us to share our own ideas as members of the Story Lab. We have speakers, and we're often listening and asking questions. So this is kind of a nice, we did this last year, turn of events where we can do a story swap and really kind of engage with each other as we practice our craft. So the mute is star six, and I think that's it for the rules. And what I'd like to do is maybe open this up. We have a couple of folks who have volunteered to do stories. They wrote to me, so I wanted to start with them, Mara Hawks and Tom Sparrow. So, Mara, I'm wondering, would you like to go first and start us off?
Oh, gosh. Okay. I will. No, that's I
can make
appreciate. No, this is good. I'm not as nervous as if I were standing in front of you and seeing you, but I appreciate the opportunity to share this story, which hasn't been shared except with a couple of siblings about 5 years ago. And if I could preface this very briefly, the person that I was reflecting on that gave me the inspiration for this story was my father. He passed away recently, almost at 101 years old, and he suffered from alcoholism, and he was the father of 10 children, and as you can imagine, there just were a lot of broken relationships. And it was difficult to, you know, really have relationships with him. One of the things that I learned about 5 years ago when I was reflecting.
Oh, and Mara, sorry to interrupt, but whoever just joined, if you could hit star six so you're on mute, that would be great for us. Thanks.
Yeah.
And Mara,
oh, that's better.
I'm sorry to interrupt too, but I forgot to ask. Do you want to? I know you, or that you. If you want to say just a little something about who you are and how you come to the world,
sure.
The story, just a little bit, and then we're following.
Yeah, I do. Let's see. I'm a curriculum developer for an organization based in the Midwest, helping to develop training and for caregivers who work with people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And it's a training program about compassion and developing narrative with others through a quality of life model of caregiving. So that's kind of basically what I do in helping to develop training and writing and, you know, content for this organization.
Well, thank you.
Well, I will just read this story, but the one little thing that would be interesting to understand and share with you is some years ago I was working with sales, and I went back to my group and was having a lot of challenges with a client, but you know, really working through it. And the comment I heard was, "Oh, they're an engineer." And I said, "What does that mean?" And this person explained to me it was a way that they could organize their thoughts and how, you know, they kind of looked out at the world. And that just gave me a big insight, because I remembered that my father was an engineer by trade for the Chicago Park District. And after a few years, I just suddenly had gained a whole different perspective about who he was as a person. And So this story, called A Baby Humbug Story, is called The Baby Who Made Christmas Beep. And it was just a way that I looked out and remembered my father. My sisters and I had baby dolls. On Christmas mornings, we never really expected to find anything from Marshall Fields under our tree, but that didn't keep us from the fun of wishing just the same. Aside from the lighting of the first Advent candle, the delivery to our home of the holiday catalog from Marshall Fields was what, for me, marked the dawn of the Christmas season. Mother's rule was that we had to be cleaned up and ready for bed, hair brushed, and two at a time were permitted to sit on the sofa and hold the book, together in our flannel laps, alternating the careful, slow turning of the dreamy gossamer pages. The remaining sisters could join us at their leisure, but don't dare touch the pages or block the holder's view with your overenthusiastic hands. We are the holders. But the final word to all of us was absolutely no fighting or off to bed we'd go. Mother could only give us the fun of the catalog, but forever found ways to surprise and delight us. For a few consecutive years, we found our familiar baby dolls on Christmas morning, huddled beneath the thickly flocked and lighted tree. They were washed and dressed in new clothes, and she had hand-fashioned and sewn with sweet piping details and tiny silver snaps. And every year I didn't recognize them at first and thought they were brand new. I'd let her know how very clever I thought Santa was and hug her dearly. We, the children, were not allowed to touch the tree once it was secured in the watering bowl. Touch with your eyes only, we were warned. Father was peculiar like that. He was an engineer by trade, but must have craved this once-a-year creative outlet, perhaps to have something look perfectly orchestrated with meticulous precision in a crowded house of many loose moving parts. Mechanical components behave so much better than we children ever did. Mother didn't seem to mind his being supervisor of the tree decorating. After all, he did a superb job of operating light shows at Chicago's downtown Buckingham Fountain. He had taken us all on tours of the underground engineering room, explaining the mousetrap design of the big pipes and soldered elbow joints, and how cranks moved the gears, and how carefully timed graduating light switch dials caused the water-falling colors to magically change. It was like being underneath the floor of a very noisy, busy bathtub belonging to a spoiled giant who was up above, drawing tons of attention to his splashing about in the tiered concentric basins that spouted and cascaded with the beautiful icy streams of colored water. I was completely enchanted with the show at the street level, especially when it was nearly snowing and the fact that we got to stay up way past bedtime. Those were the early days of tiny lights on a string, with just one occasionally needing to be replaced. But first it had to be found, because when one went out, they all went out. The children had to keep their distance from Father when he was concentrating on putting Christmas together. That was a lot of little feet that needed minding, because one mishap or a step on a light strand or glass ornament spelled Bah Humbug. Each tiny light socket would need to be tested. The strands were laid out on the floor in curvy rows, like tiny glass people with pointed toboggan hats, lined up and waiting to board a Snow Queen castle ride. Father sat on the floor near a reading light, his glasses perched low on his nose, while he tinkered with all the lights and decorations. Christmas made me happy, but also a little nervous. I was 8, going on 9, when my younger brother was born. He showed up in swaddling clothes right in the middle of summer, melting all of our hearts. It was like Christmas in July, and sneaking a peek into my father's eyes, you might have guessed that baby Jesus himself had arrived ahead of schedule, minus the delivery of the Marshall Fields catalog. At Christmas time that year, perhaps it was the way the lighting flickered and tossed shadows around the tree, or how the glass ornaments and tinsel, mirroring against the paned windows, bounced reflections of Christmas Eve back upon the sunken, snowy limbs. Whether it was an engineering secret in the setup of the lighting or simply the herald angels casting shadow plays around Mother's coveted crush, I don't know. But as the little human star inched towards the action, I swear I saw a flash of shepherds and stable animals watching over him. And I could also see that Father Christmas was the happiest kid on the block. Baby's first Christmas brought a slightly diminished degree of enthusiasm about holiday gifts for me and my sisters. But don't worry, we left him to bits and pieces at least 364 days a year, and cared for him like the real live doll that he was and still is. The following December, us four growing girls were beginning to squish each other in our assigned seating arrangement for the opening of gifts. Nestled and hassled, we tried to remain positioned in good behavior on the Paisley Prince sofa. Mother was too busy now with the new baby to sew any more doll clothes, and besides, one of my sisters honestly should have had social services come and take away her baby doll, as she had the most horrible habit of ripping off the doll's head. This distressed me to no end. I don't know why she did this. Maybe she thought it was a bank doll or had a prize inside, or just was entertained at how upset it made me. I can still picture Mother trying to refasten the hard plastic pieces. It took more strength than trying to open up a new glass jar of green olives, which didn't take up nearly this much time. Through my tears, I could tell it was no easy task for her by the clenching of her teeth and the concentrated strain I'd see in her face and how her knuckles would turn transparent white as she persevered to make the repair. When this sister was grown and began having babies of her own, it made me a little nervous. So Christmas doll clothes went by the wayside, and the toddler quickly took over any chance I was certain now of ever finding the dreams of sugar plums from Santa, like the things I'd seen on the pages of the Marshall Fields catalog, a to-cry-for doll carriage, a small-scale, delicate-as-flowers tea set, a music box that I just couldn't wait to hear, but it was still fun to think about the maybe. You can never know for absolute sure about these things. In baby's second year, I entered my first age of double digits, age 10. On Christmas morning, my sisters and I opened up the standard fare of wool socks and unmentionables, followed by carefully rationed packages of craft kits for all of us girls. But for heaven's sakes, do not open those boxes any further than the outside wrapping. Crafty bits and pieces will scatter like a sudden snowstorm and make a blanketed mess of the display room designed and engineered by Buckingham Fountain's own Father Christmas. But before the long Chicago winters ended, every last craft box had been opened, studied, and completed. Mother made certain of that and had endless patience for the puzzles. I think she was a bit of an incognito engineer myself. We were kept busy making our own crocheted hats. Mine hung way below my ears because the loops were too big. Book covers, which we already knew how to make, but now there was some pretty patterned papers to use instead of boring brown paper bags. A perfectly square red metal loom with cotton loops for making pot holders, which was my favorite. Paint by number sets, cut out felt shapes with big buttons to sew on with included colored strings or embroidery thread, crocheted mittens to match the hats. They didn't really hold up in the snow, but did add a pretty texture to wings of frozen snow angels that we managed to run outdoors and make in one freezing cold Chicago minute. There were also some basket weaving kits and lace leather projects of moccasins, thin belts with tiny glass beads and small pouches designed by Indians and Eskimos and purchased from trading posts. At least that's the story our grandparents reported, and it probably was true. And the one that Mother passed along to us as she handed out small packages from the mystery box that arrived from Branson, Missouri each year. The mailman only made his rounds while we were at school, and Mother would quickly hide it away somewhere and forget about it, but she'd always remember it at the very end of opening gifts on Christmas morning, and with her delighted-to-please smile, dragged it out across the room as if it were the last overlooked gift on a paper-wrapped park and postmarked sleigh with no reindeer. It had been re-hidden, I think, in the front coat closet on Christmas Eve. One day, I discovered that the same place was also her hiding place for a box of chocolates, very rare to have in store. Whoever made these confections appear, however, must have been on the same delivery schedule as a sweet tooth fairy because they weren't there very often at all. But I still checked on a regular basis. And one time, was making my rounds, I opened the door and found a sister inside checking too. Mother always enjoyed having just one more surprise up her sleeve. Until this very Christmas day, however, there had been jingle bells aplenty, but absolutely nothing in Christmas past had ever gone beep. This was the 1950s and 60s. Any sounds on toys in those days were mechanically, not electronically, engineered. So if a toy made any sound or moved on its own accord, it was a really big deal. Father seemed more excited than usual for the holiday. On Christmas morning, I figured out that it was because he had been busy researching toy fire trucks. Yes, the very best that money maybe shouldn't be buying fire truck for his son's first walking Christmas, A toy train came through a couple years later, only to be outdone with an oversized red, white, and chrome talk-of-the-town tricycle later on, all purchased from Marshall Fields. Meanwhile, my sisters and I got amazingly skilled at crafting goods that I imagined would truly impress some indigenous tribes. Maybe after a decade of raising four girls born within 5 years, just maybe he was all too deserving of such an escape and didn't notice that I would have happily settled for a fire truck to use as a car for Barbie with her red bouffant hairdo. She never did upgrade from the one I made with an empty corrugated Velveeta cheese box with Tinker Toy wheels, but all I could notice was the attention being paid to this little star and the one project that most consumed father. From this Christmas holiday forward, aside from his crowning achievement of engineering the lights on the flock trees. I believed all along that Santa was clever, and it was proven once and for all on this Christmas day when he obviously had placed an order from the Marshall Fields catalog. Where else would such quality and sheer magic come from, according to what I'd learned from Father Christmas? His parenting moments were endless opportunities he used to teach us about quality in manufactured goods, even if they weren't within our reach, because it's somehow related to the presentation of our own work that was within our reach by demonstrating precision and quality in our daily chores and school assignments. I sat as close as was allowed to the corral of gifts and the initial burst of joy and magic that held us together on Christmas mornings. It was a perfectly beautiful tree with Mother's heirloom papier-mâché snowmen, perfectly spaced, smiling, and frozen on the windowsill, clean and happy children. All was calm, all was bright, and as idyllic as one of Mother's Courier and I's dinner plate scenes. I'd inched my way back to the sofa by the time Father began playing, or rather illustrating and teaching us about fire trucks. We were all eyes and ears at first, shiny, red as Rudolph's nose, beautiful paint detail, lots of ladders with one that extended from a finely engineered metal swivel base. This was the tower ladder, the one that could reach the windows of all the tall buildings on Michigan Avenue, and one section could be positioned horizontally and become level with a whole row of windows and rescue a lot of people at once in a tiny wire basket. Personally, I always imagined it would be much more fun to escape from a burning building by getting to jump out onto one of those huge trampolines. So while Mother kept the baby at bay, my sisters and I remained dutiful subjects for Father's Christmas Day lesson, Fire Truck Appreciation Class 1225. After rolling through the chapter on wheels, and kudos, by the way, to whoever invented ball bearings, and then speculating on the remarkable fact that opposite ends of the hook and ladder vehicle each had its own steering wheel so that when the truck was backing up, it was really being driven forward. And this lesson may have been the beginning of my lifelong directional dyslexia. His enthusiasm continued, magnifying the precision of small-scale engineering and working movable parts, concluding with a demonstration of the, quiet please, bell that made the faintest silvery sound if you pulled the tiny string just right. And last but not least to be learned, drummer boy, roll please, was appreciating the flip of a tiny switch that set off flashing lights and a shrill siren. The wheels were rolling. At the startling sound and grand finale of the fire truck works, my sisters and I huddled on the sofa like a long winter's nap with hands folded for listening and learning, leaned in unison to the right, making way for the emergency vehicle. The baby ran after it right on cue, and Father Christmas gave himself a standing ovation and then excused himself to take care of some business before breakfast. Christmas changed a lot after that year as all of us girls began entering our teens, which must have been an engineer's nightmare. My sister, the same one who didn't give a second thought to ripping off her doll's head, started a secret rumor the next summer telling us one by one that there isn't really a Santa Claus. The news made me a little nervous. Please, please don't tell that to Father. The end.
Well, thank you, Mara, for starting us off with that really reminiscent. I mean, you could just picture some of those details. I think we're all sort of thinking about it for a moment, and that's a great idea. And then if anyone would like to make a comment or give an appreciation to Mara,
I've never read it out loud, and I think it was probably a little bit too long, and I do apologize for that.
Well, this is Mark.
A little long, but a very beautiful story, nevertheless. I enjoyed it.
Ditto. I appreciate the vivid pictures that you painted about, you know, your family and just the whole energy that was going on in the whole event. So thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, and lots of really great phrases. I wish I would have written them down. They kind of fly through my mind, but you had so much rich language in there. That was really wonderful, Mara.
Well, thank you. Who's that?
That was Tom, who just said that.
Thank you.
Yeah, this is Pete. Tom, I did write down some of those phrases that caught my ear, the social services that should have been called for the sister. The the idea of four girls entering their teens being an engineer's nightmare.
Yeah. Hi, it's Jules. I'm the one that was calling from the Greek diner in New York. It was the only place I could find. So I thought I was being so clever that I found a place and I was so proud, and then you were like, the Greek music was blasting. But anyway, so I really, I love the story, and the homespun part really resonated with me because I grew up having my mother make my clothes, and like you had to, like, you know, the homemade dollhouse and all the other things. Mm-hmm. So that kind of really struck a chord of being creative. I mean, you made me think of things I used to make, too.
Yeah.
Like I was trying to, like, make my own fireplace, worrying about Santa coming down the regular chimney. But anyway, but it was really special. So thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, this is Geraldine. And I would agree with what Jules said. And the thing that caught my attention was your Barbie car with out of the Velveeta box and the Tinker Toy wheel, because I always wanted Tinker Toys. Never got them. But having that imagery between, you know, you would have been happy to take the cast off fire truck, but that sort of can do attitude. Your father passed his engineering skills down very well.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Well, I think that that's a great opening for us, and thank you very much, Mara, for starting us off on such a good note. And
thank
I'll just
you so
open
much.
This up now. You're very welcome. I'll just open this up now to someone else who might tell a story. I know that Tom has one on tap, but, you know, is there someone else who would like to do a story? And is that all right with you, Tom, that we could?
Absolutely.
Right.
I had said that I had a whole session just in October. So if someone else has a story,
okay,
I'd love to hear it.
So why don't we open that up? Is there anyone else who would like to take a story for a spin, share it with the group? Part where I allow for silence. And so I hear a volunteer.
Sorry, I didn't have my mute off.
Oh, okay. All right.
This
well,
is Cora.
Cora, yes. Would you like to share?
Were you
going to
tell a story? Did you? Were you saying that you wanted to tell one?
No, I was asking the group. Would you like?
Okay.
To
well, one? I don't. This isn't a prepared story, but in looking at our gifts that we've received or are given was and relationship to organizations was sort of where we were headed. I was at a meeting before making this phone call for reconstruction. We are in Beaufort County, are looking at the whole reconstruction after the Civil War and the history that has never been told and has sort of been buried, and so we had this huge meeting about bringing out that. So my mind's in there, but in driving back to the house, I thought about something that happened to me quite a few years ago, which was probably just one of my really sweet gifts at Christmas, and had to do with the organization I was working at that time. So it's kind of a short vignette, more than a story, but I would like to share it. right out of college, which I graduated in college in 1970, so we're talking a long time ago. My bachelor's degree was in business administration, and my first job out of college was with Sears and Roebuck back in the day when that was a pretty powerful company, and I was in their management training program, and my first job assignment was in Miami, Florida. Also back in the day when Miami was a pretty safe place to hang out, not as riot-oriented as it is these days, but I was working in downtown Miami at the store, and one of the women in my department was from Cuba, as was true of many people who lived in Miami at the time. There was a large, of course, still is, Cuban group of people, and I really befriended her. She befriended me, and she used to take me to the Cuban coffee shops and things around Miami and kind of show me around that lifestyle. And because I was working in retail, I wasn't able to come home to South Carolina for Christmas because you work Christmas Eve. And so she invited me to come to her house on Christmas Day with all of her Cuban relatives. And I was honored that she would ask me to do that. And the one thing that I remember the most is when I got to her house, it was a little tiny house and a little, you know, kind of back street part of Miami. And I parked, and I the door that I walked into was the door that went into the kitchen. And as I was walking in the kitchen, they were taking out of the oven a whole pig that they had roasted, even with an apple in its mouth. To me, it was just like the cartoons that I had seen. I had never seen an entire pig roasted in an oven, and even including the apple in its mouth. And I was just kind of wowed by the whole experience. Went in, and we had dinner, and I mostly couldn't understand anything anybody was saying because they were all speaking in Spanish. But I was welcomed into their environment, into their culture, into their home, and I felt so honored that I was invited to spend my Christmas there with them because it was just a wonderful food and cultural experience that was totally different than anything I had ever had at Christmas time. So that's my story.
Thank you, Cora. That's, again, a really nice memory, I think. And
yes.
You know, just thinking about the details, I could really see the warmth in the home that you were invited to, and the pig with the pig with the apple. Yeah, that's kind of a visual.
Oh, they carved a pig. I mean, they put this pig on the table and they carved it just like we would a turkey or a ham.
Wow.
I mean, they took this whole pig and they put this. I mean, it was a piglet. It wasn't. I mean, it fit in their oven. It wasn't a hog. It was a piglet, I guess. But they just set it on the table and they carved it, and I was just. I don't know. I was fascinated by the entire experience.
Yeah.
It was very, as you said, warming to my heart.
Yeah.
And just, I mean, that was many, many, many years ago. Mm. And I still remember, I can almost picture myself there even today.
Well, thank you again. Mm. And I'll just open this up now if people want to comment or share an appreciation with Cora.
I just love that story. I love the image and almost like a culture shock, but it's just such an expansion of just valuing, like, how others celebrate. And now I understand where the idea of the Christmas pig comes from. Well, cook that.
Yes. I never knew that either. I have a cousin who's a hog farmer, and they roast a pig at July 4th, a barbecue, but that's just not the same. It wasn't the same. Anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, this is Ann. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, thank you. I just thought it was very visual and very beautifully drawn. I could see you walking up to the door and walking in and the surprise of seeing the pig and the warmth of the people. And it was a nice little story. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
You're welcome. As I said, it's never been developed as a story. It was sharing a moment is more than anything else.
And it was a lovely
else.
Moment, and we're glad.
I think
you
it would that. Make a great. I think it will make a great story someday, and perhaps I'll even, you know, develop it and enhance it and write it. But thank you for helping me remember that moment, because it was all about this event that made me even remember that it happened.
Mm-hmm.
Just the value of having thoughtful listeners, just being good listeners. Okay. So I guess I'll move on, if that's all right, and I'm just going to suggest, is there anyone else who would like to share a story? We've had some great examples already. Anyone else out there?
Sure, this is Pete. I've got a really short story.
Okay, you're up.
And it's, you know, I racked my brain for organizational gift stories, and I couldn't come up with one, but something happened about 2 weeks ago. My wife and I were flying back from New Mexico, and I had a first-class ticket, and she had a coach ticket. She bought her ticket late. And in the second stage of the flight between Seattle and Juneau, I boarded first, of course, and then as she came by, I stood up and I gave her my first class seat in exchange for her row 27 middle seat. And I walked back and got into my middle seat. And just before the plane took off, one of the flight attendants came up to me, tapped me on the shoulder, and she said, are you supposed to be in this seat? And I said, well, no, I exchanged seats with my wife. And she said, well, this is something that just makes my job wonderful and brings tears to my eyes. She said, the gentleman sitting in the seat next to your wife wants to trade places with you.
Aww.
And I thought, oh no, I couldn't do that. You know, this is a middle seat, and that's first class. And then I thought, you know, if I refused that, it would be rude. So I exchanged first-class seats with this gentleman that we did not know, and my wife and I flew together, you know, in first class. And I thought, if this time in this time and place where there are so many people who are at each other's throats over who they voted for president, this man didn't ask who I voted for, and I didn't ask who he voted for. It was just a complete gift out of thin air, and it made me very mindful that I need to do this as well. Someday, somebody will get a gift from me that is entirely unexpected, and it was a wonderful experience. The end.
The end.
Mm-hmm.
Pete, thank you so much for sharing that story. That really is. I don't know if I've ever been in first class, but for me to give it up, I don't know. I'd have to think about that. So it's just very heartwarming to think, with all the sort of incivility that's going on, that civility and grace was present. So thank you for that. I'm going to open it up. Thoughts, appreciations?
Just beautiful. Gosh, I love that story. I'm so inspired. I've never been in first class either, but what a loving gesture by both of you, by you and the man in row 27. The gift that kept on giving, and now you're giving it to us.
I think we should all fly with Pete.
I think the moral of the story is fly with Pete. I like that.
Yeah.
The moral of the story.
No, this is Mark. I'll echo what was just said in that I love the how one story led to another story, which leads to another story. It's just the whole, you know, one person, you know, paying it forward, so to speak, you know, to the other. So thank you. It's a great reminder right now to surprise somebody for no other reason but to surprise them.
This is Cora. The next time I fly regular, I'm going to ask the stewardess to ask someone in first class if they would like to exchange with me.
How thoughtful of you, Cora.
Well, there just may be somebody up there, you know, who knows.
Who's dying to be in the middle seat in roll 27.
Right.
Well, that's innovative thinking. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, if Pete can find somebody that was willing to do it, then, you know, I must be able to.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, I have a very quick story, but I'm noticing our time, and I don't want to do it unless other people, if there's someone out there who wants to tell a story. So let me toss it out. Would anyone else like to tell, you know, a story? I have about 4:15, so I think we're good until around 4:05 if we want to stay on. So any other takers? Okay, I'm going to take that as a okay then. I'm going to tell a very quick story that I hadn't planned on telling, so I'm following Cora's lead about the unprepared. I still work for a very long time with a client at Boston College here in Massachusetts, and we did a program for many years for leaders, and every year we changed it and did something different, and we were doing it one year, last year actually, and I noticed that our outline was not working. So he had welcomed them, and we had done sort of an icebreaker, and then he was giving information, and we had both thought this was a good idea, that we would kind of get through all this stuff up front. And I noticed while I was sitting, waiting, you know, for my turn to do something, that there was just a lack of energy. It was very quiet. And even though his information and delivery were quite good, that people were just sort of not connecting. So I wrote, since we worked together and we had partnered for a very long time, I wrote him a note on the back of a napkin, and it said, "Bernie, I'm going to go off script. Trust me. Please trust me." And he gave them something to do, to think about for a moment. So I passed the note to him. He looked down at it, read it, looked over at me, and nodded. And I thought, this is great that we can communicate so well together that I don't have to go into a long explanation, because like, we can't do it in front of the group of 30 leaders from this organization. So I proceeded to go up, and I had them ask them questions, I just threw in an activity, so the juices got flowing, and things kind of picked up. And afterwards, when we had a break, I said to him, "I just want to thank you so much for, having faith that I wasn't going to take us anywhere where we couldn't come back from, and I know I went off the topic, and, you know, I just really appreciate it. We've practiced so long on this that you were so willing to kind of let me go in this direction, and I think it really, comes down to how much you trusted me." And he said, "Well, actually, Tricia, I couldn't read your writing, so I just nodded."
Oh, my gosh.
And I just remember thinking, an even greater gift of trust.
Mm.
And he said, I knew it would be okay. I knew it would be okay. But he said, I cannot read your writing. I didn't know what you were talking about. So I actually have told that story a few times in organizations to talk about the gift of trust. And it started out on one kind of trust and wound up to be something totally different. But I still think about that, his willingness to, just go with it, you know, whatever I had kind of planned. So, and I treasure that and that relationship to this day. So that's my gift sort of, it is sort of within an organization, within organizational context, I guess. And that's my story. So, anyone else who would like to put a story out there?
Well, thank you, Tricia. I really enjoyed that.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
I was just thinking about, you know, gifts from the heart are just so full of possibilities and flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, I love how that all came together, how it was picked up and opened. And, you know, just kind of grew from there and became what it was supposed to.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, the intangibles.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I could...
go ahead, Tom, yes.
Share my story as well, which is pretty short and anecdotal, like several have been here as well. But... thanks, Tricia, for sharing yours. That's too funny. I couldn't read your writing, but I knew it'd be okay.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's a great topic for. I mean, that's a great title.
Yeah.
I couldn't read your writing, but I knew it was going to be okay.
I love it. I love it.
I love the title. That's such a fabulous
that's
title.
Okay.
So my story is. Quite a few years ago, I was on a development committee for a school, and we did lots of good things, and we got ourselves organized. We were really a ragtag group at first, but then got things together and raised a lot of money, and we had a very small group at first, but then it kept growing. And then we had this woman who joined our group, and she thought it was really important that we give back to the faculty as part of the development committee, because there would really be no school if it weren't for the good work that the faculty was doing. And she formed this wonderful banquet for the all of the teachers, and it was really out of my comfort zone because they brought in all these fancy dishes and they had all this unusual food and they did crazy table settings and all kinds of lighting. And I mean, I appreciate some decorations, but that was not my role in the development committee. But this one woman said, you know, can I give you a job? And I said, okay, as we were preparing. And so we were gifting, this happened just about this date several years ago, and we were gifting the faculty, and she said, you know, I'll give you a job. And she said, you're going to make a special salad, and I have all the ingredients. And she gave me lettuce and walnuts and feta cheese and fresh pears, and she had me cut up the pears and then slice some chicken and then cut some grape tomatoes and then put on this Brianna's salad dressing and mix in the feta and mix in the walnuts. And I did this up in a really fancy, beautiful bowl, and I did that, and everybody loved that salad, and probably nobody loved it more than me. And after that event, and we did such a nice thing for the faculty, about a month later, you know, we were trying to decide what to cook at dinner just at home. I said, well, I could make up the salad, you know, that I learned from my friend Lori. And I did, and my wife had already experienced the salad, and she really loved it. And then my kids had it, and they really loved it. And now it's like 10 years later, and I've probably made that salad, you know, 40 times over the years. And then last year, my friend died. And I was just thinking, you know, what a gift it was that she said to me, you know, can I give you a job? And what a gift it is to say yes, to help others. And how it, we often say, you know, I got more out of it than you did as we help others. And this is a salad that keeps on giving. And I'm so glad I said yes to her offer. So I wanted to share that. It just reminds me of gifting and how gifting keeps coming back to us.
Thank you, Tom. That's really, that's another lovely, memorable story.
Wow.
And I was thinking, I was feeling anxious at the beginning because you were saying it's a very fancy salad. And I'm thinking, oh, no, 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 because I would have trouble with that. Like, being quick, am I going to be able to do this? And I loved how, and then you said 10 years later, I've made it 40 times, which was kind of a surprise to me. So thank you. It was lovely. And thoughts?
He may have actually made it more times than that.
Geraldine kicking in.
Yeah, and it's. I'm just going to correct one thing in case anyone, you know, when you go back to the recording to get the recipe, it's blue cheese.
Oh, not feta cheese. I was so impressed that he remembered all the ingredients.
That made the story so much better for me now that it's blue cheese.
It is fabulous. And I debated telling a story, which I won't, but the story I was going to tell was about that lunch.
Really?
That first lunch. Because I was on the faculty, and it started a tradition that I treasured, especially when we had some hard times at school, that we would have this meal that the development committee would do for us. And it was really an awesome experience. It's one of my highlights of 15 years of teaching there.
Oh, my. Very nice. Thank you.
Wow.
Any
wonderful.
Comments? Appreciations?
Wonderful.
Thank you.
I'm just keeping an eye on the time here. It's about 3:53, and I think at 4 o'clock our recording stops. I think I'm just going to wind up by saying and then ask if others want to say anything. But thank you all for contributing and for sharing this really lovely hour together on this this day when we can be so busy doing so many things. I do encourage you to watch our website.
Thank you, Trish. I'm going to sign off.
Okay, Jules.
Again.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Check out a preview of coming attractions.
Bye, Jules.
And, Mark, I don't know if we have, do we have a January program or we'll be getting something shortly, or do you want to say anything about that? Just preview
sure,
of coming attractions?
Yeah, I think we're going to continue to do our best to produce a monthly story lab. We don't have anything laid out specifically for January yet, but I'm sure we'll come up with something very soon. What I will say is I always, we work so hard to bring in, guest speakers and stuff, but I always appreciate the fact that we get to tell story, which is part of what we do. And I got to say, while I love all of our great speakers who share with us the wisdom, I think there's a lot of wisdom in what we have to share with each other. And so
absolutely.
I really enjoyed today. But we will get back to everybody on January. And the board will, in our traditional style, will stay on for a few minutes later.
Oh, okay. Great. All right. All right. Well, I think I'm going to press the magic button here in a moment to end the recording. So happy holidays, Merry Christmas.
Happy holidays.
Happy.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Merry Christmas
to you as
well. Thank you so much for attending.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.